Just to clarify, say, I don't have a problem. Let me start with this piece. When I'm talking about demographics, that's unkilled, that's it. It's not about black or white. It's about the fact that I accept it's historical. But I was just asking that you can't find any person, whether Indian or colored or even Chinese. That's what I'm saying. Maybe, like you said, it's a historical issue. Two, on the issue of the... I was raising the issue of the personal cost in the context of what... two issues, I think, the CFO and the COO raised with regards to the implications, first, in terms of the overhead, the remuneration and benefits. Secondly, in relation to the execution of work that is given to the entity. So it's not a question that whether it is not required, but it's a question that's why I said, sometimes when you come and present in such a way that where there are challenges, people can see that this is what is required. I don't want to the CEO of Dr. Mahal to live here with the perception that we're saying, Let's do away with this. It's not my intention. The question I was asking, that's why I said I would prefer to see the facts. They know the first time I raised it was that ordinarily when you go to an organogram and there is a COO, that's the first issue I was raising. The COO will be below the CFO because there is no relationship with the personnel staff. But the reason for the first structure is that context. You then have to see who is then below, because you look at the CFO, you find the supply chain, whatever, all those are linked there. You will go to what you call the other executives, whether it is with human resource, you will get the human resource officers and so forth. Now, why does it become, you can't have an executive who doesn't have anyone who's accounting to. That's the point I was trying to make. That's why I said, the question sometimes in other areas, you get a manager, maybe below an executive, there's a manager, then below that manager, there's another manager, which is an irregular arrangement of a structure that the manager reports to another manager. So that is the context I was raising to say we have to look. But second, I was saying, in the category of entities, sometimes entities I've got a category, probably on the basis of a turnover, I can't remember very well. At least I did was this King 1, King 2. The last time I did King 2, I've not done King 3.
It's King 4 now.
So it's King 4 now. Yeah. I'm far behind. You can see. It means I'm no longer sitting on any board anymore.
Yeah, you can see this one.
But it used to prescribe and categorize. Treasury, at some point, had also put categorization. That categorization is able to tell you what type of a tracker you have to possess when you do a creation. Now, the point I was coming to again was not it's not automatic. And it's not a question that you kill a structure on the basis that you want to. But I was saying, part of the issue that you are raising, you are faced with shrinkage and so forth and so forth, is probably, I think the minister raised that question also. The Minister of Finance has raised an issue to say, those non-performing state entities, they may get the job. But also it raises an issue of reconfiguration. So when we deal with that issue, I'm not dealing with it only in relation to one entity. I'm dealing with it, that's why I made that example to say, you may find another entity looking at one, and say we would create a similar arrangement. And they may provide a motivation which is similar to the other one. Probably that question may not necessarily be linked to CGS per se. It's the oversight authority that the department has to look at. So that whether it's driven, I understand the independence of the board, whether it's driven so that we avoid some of the things to happen now, and then when they emerge somewhere else, you block them. When you never block them, when they were taking place in another area. I accept the chair to say he found it there. The chairman also is giving an explanation, but I'm saying, with all these challenges, shouldn't we look now, as you say, obviously it should not affect all the incumbents. That is the point. The COO first was going to respond on that issue.
Thanks, sir. When I'm looking at the first question that Honorable Mandela raised with regards to the challenges that we are experiencing in the shale gas project, indeed the challenges are there. The first one that I'm going to highlight there is the challenges with regards to the public participation and consultation. Fortunately, this has not been a responsibility that Council for Geoscience in its own entirety has taken, but this is the exercise that we are assisted by the department. I think the first one that took place was in FERB, and it was led by Honorable Minister. As to whether traditional leaders have been consulted, because this is the aspect of the project that is really led by the department, I was not in a position to provide with further information. During our inviso in CREDOC, some of the key questions that people really ask is really about job creation, to say, as people of this particular area, how are we going to benefit from this particular project? And indeed, the concerns that we raise there is such projects do come to these rural areas, but then they have tendencies of employing people from housing. And this is something that was really raised. And going to another question with regards to the applications of the flight with applications information. Those areas that you have seen, they are applications that were made, but the exploration rights have not been issued as yet. Perhaps this is why now the department has actually engaged the Council for Geoscience to say, we have not as yet done the research work to understand this changes dynamics. The Beaufort West area, it is chosen as a research site. The deep drilling of 3.5 kilometers that I'm talking about, that is likely to take place before the end of the financial year, it is a research well. This is where now we are going to be saying, how do we go about sampling our gas, quantifying that gas so that we can have an understanding of where we are, and also looking into the potential negative impact onto the groundwater. So this is really a research project with a research well. It's not going to be a production well. The other question that was raised by Honorable Lorima was with regards to why only one site chosen or selected. Why Beaufort West but not other areas? Obviously there are financial constraints with regards to looking at other areas where there might be potential shakers. So with the little resources that we are having, we are saying let's not hold arms and not do much, but with the little money that we have, let's at least have an understanding of the challenges and the work that is going to be of importance in nature in the future, should we find that the space within the shelters within the ground. And obviously with this research, the main purpose really would be for us to come up with a regulatory input to the department. And another thing that I really would like to raise here is that this is really an area that is so much of an unknown, particularly to South Africa. Therefore, we are looking at other state-owned entities to see how can we then consolidate the expertise that we have in the country from different government departments and make sure that we come up with a sound research team that is likely to take this project forward. Those entities that I would like to mention here is we are in the process of partnering officially with PASA and PetroSA. There was also a question with regards to the mineral resources in the Eastern Cape. And unfortunately, we do not find the likes of coal, gold in the Eastern Cape, but what we are doing when we are now making the Eastern Cape is to find out that at least with the aggregate mapping, we will be in a position to get some of these materials that would help in terms of economic development, of infrastructure development, like the road materials, the building materials, and so on. So it's better than nothing, something that we're looking at to benefit the people of the Eastern Cape. And, Chair, you did ask about why we're doing commercial projects, particularly out of the country, the risk that is associated with it. When you look at the slides that was presented by our CFO, and we compare the different grants that we are receiving, it is indeed very necessary that we embark on commercial projects to try to augment our baseline funding. Before we really get to be involved in this project, we have the groundwork that we do in terms of trying to see how much risk are we exposing ourselves into. But with these countries that I've highlighted, I can assure you, Chair, that these projects are of financial sense to the organization, and the risk of operating in those countries are minimal. And to add on to that, when you look at our mapping program in Malawi, in Namibia, we've done so much work in Namibia, almost at the end of each and every contract with them being extended. This is to show that the quality of work that we are doing is highly appreciated outside. Also, when you look into Malawi, we did the geohydrological mapping of Malawi. The project has since come to an end, but now they have approached us to say there's more work come back to finalize the mapping of the country in terms of the geohydrology. Chair, I think I've covered most of the questions that we were asking on my role and responsibilities as the CEO. Thank you.
Chair, the risk, the profiling of the risk of those projects involves even to identify who's actually feeding the bill. Most of our projects are either, they are not commissioned in the sense of private sector commission. They are funded by the European Union, they are funded by the World Bank. That is the core, that is the source of the funding. So we know as in advance from the planning by the World Bank that this is the area where they will be making. So that kind of analysis, and over and above that, we're costing the project. We've got our pricing policy where all our costs are covered, and the spread building to make sure that there's something that comes back.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I think you have also asked another question, which says that, you know, what is it that is not supposed to be cut? Or what is it that we cannot do without, which is a sort of a, you know, very, very fundamental and deep question. You know, when I first started working with the CGS, think there was a time when we asked for more funding to do mapping and to extend some of the geological work. Just giving you an example. And the answer that we got at that time was that, you know, when you do mapping, mainly the mines, you know, who benefit, you know, out of the outcome, you know, of the mapping. And therefore, let the mines pay, you know, for that type of work. And then we continue. But then came a time when we first had when we had the first load shedding in the country, you know, around 2008 and 2009. Mm-hmm. You know, when seismically stable sites had to be identified within the country to be able to put up a nuclear power station. Another time, it was found that the only place which had a 100-year record of you know, how stable the whole country, you know, was the Council for Geoscience, which had kept those records over the years. And we began to ask, and then at that time, you know, when ESCOM came with that challenge of finding the stable state, they said that no, they would like to take the whole staff of the Council for Geoscience and dedicate them to this, because this is the research. But at that time we said, I asked myself personally, and I said, you know, the council had not been supported over the 100 years, or justified its existence over the 100 years, and we keep, you know, those records, how would we be able to sort of find stable sites? You know, some of these things are natural heritages, you know, that we have to sort of keep within the organization, so that when the time of crisis comes, we are able to sort of stand up without depending on anybody externally. And if we were to cut, you know, some of those activities, we would have also cut some of them. So it made me think a lot about the fact that there are certain things that we take for granted. They run from year to year, we do them from year to year, but we never really go to ask questions why we are continuing to do them. What benefits do they have in the short term and in the long term, on the long term basis? I'm just coming to the point that you are raising. And also, one of the questions I think that you are raising, you know, that countries like Namibia and Mozambique have been supported by the World Bank or the European Union to be able to be met on the right scale and appropriately. And after, you know, that investment, there had been a very good indication or correlation between, you know, investment by other companies from outside in mining versus how good or how well the country has been met. And when we come to South Africa, you know, those institutions normally say South Africa is well developed, we don't need that type of support, you know, like Mozambique or any other countries in South Africa. And therefore, South Africa has to, you know, support itself to map the country well. And so, you can see that even with what we are having now, we haven't mapped the whole country, you know, to the scale that is required because of the, you know, the limited resources that are there. But, you know, mapping the country appropriately is very important because the country is a heritage. We have to be able to understand it very well in order to, you know, be able to utilize it, not only for purposes of mining, but also for hazard or for, you know, environmental issues, etc. But our main limitation all along has been on the question of resources. So we always have to balance, you know, what is affordable, how far we can go. But if resources were available, we could have moved at a faster pace to do some of the fundamental things, such as, you know, mapping properly and keeping the records properly, so that even the generation that is going to live 100 years from now can look back and say, well, we did well by investing in the center.
Yes. You see, we want to in one area doing an overlay, and when they were presenting, they presented everything good that they were doing, and they forgot on the one thing to say to us, what can we do to assist? So all of you, you can present everything that is good. We will take it good as it is, and we'll go with it. When you come back and say, you said, no, 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 you said, but it's okay. Babum says, the last one.
Dedication, some of us.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. Just to assist with the questions that have been posed by Mandela, in terms of consultation process, that is in follow-up. We came up with a communication strategy which also identified the key stakeholders that we have to consult with the department. And as she indicated to Dr. Matidi, we've been also to CREDOC, but Mr. Mabuza can talk more on the consultation with the traditional leaders as well. And the process moving forward as indicated on our beginning. And we agreed, Honorable Chairperson, on the issue that was raised by also Honorable Mandela. Yeah, we taking the liability of the derelict and ownerless money. There is a process that we also initiated as a department to try and trade the previous owners of those sites. However, as the Chairperson indicated, working together with the CGS and Intech, the reputation of the risk matters also help in terms of limiting the risks that the Chairperson has referred to, including to expose the trust and also reducing the activity of illegal mining over the affair. However, we have started with that particular process. And we will look at ways to get an indicator. We have to prioritize the current path that we are having to make sure that we don't affect that area. But we must get out of the stakeholders and also social. We agree, Chairperson, the issue of women in mining strategy. We've also raised it before. But we are striving as a department to finalize this matter. But for us, we felt that it's very important that before we finalize the strategy, we consult with all the affected interested stakeholders, especially the sector and organized labor. We also engage with our entities. The issue of health and safety, Honorable Chairperson, it was one of the key issues that was of a challenge for us as a sector. You can still recall, Honorable Members as well, that there were regrettably, some of our women in mining who were attacked, some of the miners, and unfortunately they lost their lives at one stage. So we had to, as a priority, as agents, we come up with ways on how to respond to ensure that we comply with the provisions of the Mining and Safety Act. And then we came with that initiative of doing the research through council and also implementing some of the things that Mr. Dube was referring to and coming up with our committee. But we fully agree it's very important that once the strategy gets finalized, there's an alignment. But we want to assure the Chairperson that one of the things that strategy is looking at is health and safety. There is a section on health and safety. There are sections on also transformation and also the personal touch on in terms of our employment equity. And we would do acknowledge the fact that strategy is there to augment the current legislative framework, which is based on the MLBA and the Open Safety Act and the Employment Equity Act, to how to, within our sector, respond to it. If I might miss any other questions, Chairperson, I thought those are the questions that we have to respond to. Probably Mr. Mabuza can cover touch on the issue of consultation moving forward.
Mr. Maboza, the impact to your feet.
One question.
Thank you very much. On the stage of application, Honorable Speaker, is that after the regulation last year, the Petroleum Agency of South Africa then directed those who had already applied to go and undertake the environmental assessment. And it's a process that takes some time so that it is done properly, so that we don't have the consequences of environmental but we have been engaging with the upstream petroleum industry, and they say to us that for them to be able to convince the investment committee to release the funds so that they can begin to undertake exploration, one of the key aspects is the finalization of the MPRDA because once that is finalized with the proposal that is contained, then they would know that the certainty that they require is in place. So we are at your full disposal, Honorable Speaker, and members, with that development. I think I just want to correct the issue of consultation as it was articulated here. What we are undertaking are advocacy programs. Because shale gas is a fairly new activity, shale gas development in the country, it is incumbent upon us to take the people of South Africa into confidence on what it is, what are the benefits, what are the disadvantages and the risks, and so on and so forth. So what Minister was doing was part of that advocacy program, and we have a comprehensive advocacy program throughout the country, and Minister will be leading the implementation of that shale gas advocacy program. The issue of consultation is contained in the law as it stands, that traditional authorities and directly affected stakeholders in the land that they hold custodianship on, it is a pre-requirement that they are consulted. And so if they are not, that would be tantamount to breach of law. Thank you.
We're concerned because you also mentioned the Eastern Cape, so you think that you are going to have the
exploration. We can't
change. I'm sure we will deal with other questions. You know, the more you present, the more things are coming before. But it's okay. Minister, any questions? Clarity?
Nothing.
Don't forget, like this practice of the little study. Tell us about the very broad, what you say. Where do we have to go? Honorable Mandela?
You are the only one. So I'm keeping you from the food.
Okay.
Well, I can think of two reasons, Chairperson. why who would think that there are sometimes thought to be a cancer when they are minted. One of them is illustrated on page 6, speaks of derelict and ownerless mind rehabilitation. And it is indeed yet another duplication of what Council for Geoscience does. So I want to refer to the State of the Nation's address when President, His Excellency, President Zuma said we all need to cut costs and tighten up the belt. Should we rid ourselves of this responsibility in terms of MINTEC and let Council for Geoscience do it? Without then being cutting costs in this budget, or should we throw loosely and see as to what their take is on that? I think, Honorable Chair, the other issues have been settled that by DMR input on the previous presentation, which do touch on this one. Thank you.
Okay.
Chair. Sure. But before that, on your last week, it says I don't suffer from color blindness. It says on, and this one is based on a specific case. I always, and I think it will have to clarify because it's one issue. I always understood that the issue of, for example, of the CBC, because this blue line says it's complete. It says it's complete. Now, can we get what is happening? I'll be honest, I've met people, they say they are a, what do they call it, a co-op of about 1,500. They say, when they call, they say they are the biggest, not just in South Africa, in Africa, co-op. And amongst other things, there's an interest in the quarry. And they are doing that quarry, except that they were looking for funding, whatever that it is. In that engagement, it came to me that there was an issue with the issue. And I assumed, with the report of complete, or about to be complete, that it is in rehabilitation. Can we get the state time so that on the rest of the other blue we can understand what that complete means, so that the department that is the, because I understand that it's a task assigned first by the department. I remember some of the presentation, that's why I said I didn't know whether it was MINTEC or CGS. I remember at some point it was even explaining that what do you call this thing, I don't like this word tender, but the USSC is often expression of interest or whatever. And in the process, you are about to appoint a contractor and so forth. Can we get what is the status there? That's the only specific area that one can talk to. One slight issue that I think also we may require to that clarity to us, because it does help. On your finance, which could be similar to, let's say, clarity, which could be similar to, I look at your surplus. I'm not contesting what you do. I'm looking at your surplus. Your surplus seems to be on a decline. What could be the cause of it? So that we have an understanding as to what could be the I understand the issue of the decline in terms of commercial revenue. It is something that is now eating on the surplus, and you have to tap on other areas. The last issue, in somewhere in the report, again, I wouldn't know whether, I don't want to take for granted. It says that some contracts are coming to an end, but it talks about the possible extension or receiving new contracts. Does that necessarily suggest that it is something that where it says on the slide 10, it talks about 2015-2016 was the final year of 3-year rehabilitation project,
yeah.
But new contracts are expected to be signed soon. I'm raising this so that you see the word expected is not the same with the word about to be. We may get a situation where tomorrow you say, now when we presented to you, we expected. One, is it something that is almost definite? But secondly, what if, what could be the financial implications if that does not happen? What could be the financial implication? That will talk also on the issue of, it may have implications on the issue of smaller, I don't want to use this word, smaller nyan. Talk about the small project. So I think to me those are quite critical. I must say also, not because now we are on the internet, maybe we should just say, what is still good, even for the department, and I think you must retain that, is that at least all of you, for now, there is no complaint about how you are utilizing the public resources. So I think it's important to say that in advance.
Thank you. I'll first ask Peter to give it a stab, and then I'll run it off after him.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. Honorable Mandel, maybe I can comment first of all on the dual responsibility for derelict and owners mine sites. And you raised the rights in the beginning in your introduction about the three-legged structure that you have there. Mr. McGruther might want to add something to that as well, given that DMR's primary responsibility. We work very closely with CGS. CGS has a slightly different but complementary skills base to Mintec. CGS has got skills in maintaining the database and doing the prioritization and the ranking of the risk and the hazard of these sites, which is what they do. So they basically are the custodians of the database, and they look at those aspects of the site. DMR then makes the decision as to which sites are better rehabilitated by the competencies within CGS versus the competencies within Mintec. These sort of activities, the sort of civil engineering activities, are not a core skill within Mintec. What we're actually using from Mintec is project management, procurement, and financial administration capabilities. So I wouldn't say there's any overlap between what Mintec and CGS are doing. It's very complementary. To give an opinion on that, there are, it's well known, there are quite a few thousand, with 6,000 is often mentioned, of total derelict and odorless mine sites, and around 250 asbestos sites. Of the 250 asbestos sites, in 8 years of operation, we basically have only rehabilitated less than 20, certainly less than 30. So it's an enormous effort that needs an enormous capability. And I would say the total capability that you have, unless you create a lot more capacity at one of the institutions, what we are trying to do at the moment is use available capacity from the different institutions at the disposal of DMR to make as much of an impact as possible. So that could be my answer to the dual responsibility. It's just trying to use as best as possible the available capacity within the institution. The next point, very specific point about the CTCT. The CTCT is very different to those other projects. It's not asbestos, it's a rock quarry. There's no effluence, the problem that's created by contamination of the ground, water, or breathing in the dust or anything. It's purely a physical problem. There's a high wall to the quarry on the one side, and then it slopes off on the other side. So the major risk you've got there, there's no accumulated water anymore in the quarry. It's a flat base, there's no dam or anything that anybody can drown in. The biggest problem is livestock or people accidentally falling off, or kids playing and falling off the high wall of the quarry. The new proposed N2, the plan of the N2, is going to cut across the corner of that Usikisiki quarry. Now, we discussed it with the National Roads Authority and looked very carefully at their plans and where the quarry was. They are not sure at this stage whether they actually need to resuscitate the quarry, maybe to extract rock from the quarry for their construction operations at the N2, or exactly how close it's going to be to the quarry. Do they move the road slightly or not? The last thing we wanted to do would be to the only way you can permanently rehabilitate is to take that very steep wall and cut it back so you've got a gentle slope. The last thing we want to do is do that and then find, in fact, work is duplicated. Work is required because, in fact, they want to mine additional rock out of the quarry, or that the road cuts across it. So as a temporary measure, we said what we do is fence off the high wall part of the quarry, which we did with about a 2-meter concrete palisade fence. So all we've done is take the fence from where the slope starts building up all the way around the top. We put a concrete palisade fence. It's not permanent rehabilitation. All it is a temporary safety measure until there's clarification about the N2 and what's going to happen there. There's no illegal mining happening there. There's no other cooperative that we are aware of that's working in the area. It's very different to Aussie's Valley, where there is a cooperative illegal mining structure. The implications of the signing, the probability of signing the contract with the DMR, I would say the probability is 99.9% sure that we will sign. We've just recently received, last week received the contract. We just need to look at some of the details of the contract, and I'd be interested in what Mr. Mabuto said, but from his side, but from our side, in all certainty, we will sign the contract. The implications of not signing it and not going ahead to Minsex finance it is there's 50 million rand a year of potential revenue that will not come into Minsex. And if I refer back to that graph which shows the state funding, commercial funding, and there was that sudden jump in state revenue, and as Mr. Simulani said, that was MTEP funding. A large part of it was MTEP, but also 50 or 60 million rand of that a year was this revenue from various owners' mine sites, so that will suddenly drop again.
Do exactly what you do. Negotiate here. We are witnesses that 99% chances you are gonna be approved. One issue, believe it was, I've asked the MR to go and check on the issue of this. I'm not saying it is. I don't know. I've never been. But I said they must go and check before. In the same quarry, it seems that is where the mining license is contracted. No. I don't know, but I'm sure they can give us the answers whether that is true or not. But the point now, I get what you say, that it's a finished work which still remains possible, subject to be revisited for further rehabilitation, subject to the N2 gateway and other related matters, specifically subject to the N2 gateway. You want to add the...
Yes, sir, yes, because we also had another question. But going back to rehabilitation, I'm probably one of the few people who are still here who started rehabilitation of Funan Assembly. So I've got a bit of a history of it. This was a function that was being done by the Department of Mineral Energy then. And the department realized that it's becoming impossible for it as a department to do it. I won't dwell to the reasons. There are reasons which are still valid even today. And therefore, they decided, the department therefore decided to call the CEO of the then CEO of CGS and the then CEO of Mintech to say, how can you help the department that we start seeing places that are being rehabilitated, because the department was failing to rehabilitate places. Hence, as a result, today you see quite a number of places that are being rehabilitated. And there's no duplication. Every institution on a three-year contract basis knows exactly what they're supposed to be doing. And maybe I wouldn't have argued this much in Mandela if you have said, let's talk everywhere, everybody else, but heavy at Mintech. Maybe I wouldn't have talked. But then I'm going back to the history, because I'm probably in this house, I'm the only person who knows the history as to what happened. And the system is working well now. And if you cut it in one institution, it means you'll be cutting jobs in those, in that particular institution where you're cutting it. We have to be very careful when it comes to cutting things. And then coming to... I think Peter dealt very well with the issue of the contract, so I won't go back to it. Coming back to the issue of the surplus, I think probably there could be a misinterpretation about terminology. Right? If we were in a private sector company, the surplus we're talking about in a private sector company is a profit. Okay? It's not the reserve. It means the profits of Mintech are declining on an annual basis. And the reason of thereof is because we don't make profit from parliamentary grants or NGF. We would make profit out of commercial work. And the commercial work has been decreasing almost every year for quite a number of years now. The figure that I have, for example, between the two previous years, it was declining by 4%. So it is declining, hence therefore the profitability of the institution is declining, which is really a big worry for us, because you cannot continuously increase the salaries of employees in the same manner you are increasing them when you are having high profitability. So it's a bit of a serious problem. Thanks, sir.
Okay. On that note,
I was just supposed to ask you to have I'm not sure.
Sorry.
Yeah.
Can I still record it?